हरे हे सहनावधु सहनाभुनक्ख सह वीर्यंकरवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So now Satyavati, she had two sons. Right? Who are these sons? Look inside. Who are these sons? Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. And so they. What?
Bhishma
and Vyasa. Bhishma
and Vyasa. Satyavati.
Yeah. So whose sons were Chitrangada and Vichitravirya? Whose sons were Chitrangada and Vichitravirya? Because that was with Shantanu. See, Bhishma was with Ganga. Right? So, okay. So then they, you know, happily ruled the kingdom through their full lives, retired to the forest and took Vanaprastha, yes? Yeah? No. Then? What happened? One died from tuberculosis, the other died in battle. Why would one die in battle? He was fighting with another Gandharva. Means that Chitrangada was a Gandharva, he fought with another Gandharva. Okay, fought with a Gandharva the same name, and then? He lost. And he lost immediately with the first arrow. For 3 years, yes, okay. 3 years. It's not bad, not bad, okay. Okay, and then Vichitravirya died of tuberculosis. Why did he die of tuberculosis?
Because he was not concentrating on his ruling the kingdom, he was just enjoying his life.
Yes, he wasn't doing his duties, taking care of the kingdom. He was just enjoying with his wives. So he became so weak that he got tuberculosis and died. And this is a big, strong Kshatriya. Okay. Then after that, then Satyavati said, oh well, what to do? And, you know, Bhishma ruled the kingdom. Right? Yes? No? Then?
She was asking Bhishma to rule the kingdom, but then Bhishma was giving many, many things that this is both we should not rule. And then she called Vyasadeva, so
he can bring his sons on the Vichitravirya's purpose. Okay, so then Bhishma said he wouldn't rule the kingdom, and so then they needed heirs to the kingdom, and so then she sent, the ministers out to purchase hundreds of thousands of boxes of Cracker Jacks. And then opening all that, then they thought that they might find some heir to the kingdom, right? No, then?
She asked also Bhishma that he should be given sons from the wives of Chitrangada, and he said he can't do it because his vow was no longer called. recording for a benefit, but also the, it was, you couldn't do that because it takes a while to follow the principle of the brahmacharya.
Yes, okay, so Bhishma said he couldn't do this because she had making a vow to be a brahmachari so that Satyavati then could become the mother of Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, right? So then it was worked out, then okay, Bhishma is not going to do. Then what's the other alternative? If a brother is not performing the acts of Niyoga, then a Brahmin. Just any old Brahmin, so they go out on the street and, hello, Brahmin. Yeah, like that? Yeah? Qualified means? He knows the Vedas. Right? He knows the Vedas. And he follows them. Okay, so knowing is one thing. Knowing is good. That means you've made the endeavor that you've learned. Following then is better. Right? Does that make sense? So would that have any connection why in the Gurukul that we study things and we practice things? What do you think? Some connection is there, or it's just a kind of random chance that it happens to be like that? Right? Yes? So in other words, action without knowledge doesn't give good result, right? So we have to have knowledge, and we have to be able to practically do things, right? Isn't it? That's why in the school, that's why so much activity is there, right? And if you have knowledge, then more important is the practice, right? And so that's why you see there's so much practice, right? Because someone might think, hey, we could do less practical service and do more classes, right? But the problem is doing more classes but not being able to practically apply it isn't of any benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to be able to do both. Yeah? So that's why then a qualified Brahmin, then where did this qualified Brahmin become a qualified Brahmin? Right? He stayed at home, didn't do anything, let his mother do everything, just eats nicely, complains about everything, like that. Yeah? Yes? No? I mean, that's what his sisters do. So I'm saying, wouldn't that be the way to go? No? Oh, okay. So what did they do? Where did they learn all this? They went to Gurukula. So that means there was Gurukulas before this. It's not just a modern thing that's designed to make kids uncomfortable. Right? So it's a tradition. Right? Okay. So now they've decided that someone else is going to do. Who is this other person who's going to perform the Niyoga? Vyasadeva. So what in connection with this, what are his qualifications? He was qualified Brahmin and a brother. Okay, can't get better than that. Okay. So now move on. Section 106. Vaishampayana said, soon after the monthly season of the princess of Kosala had been over, Satyavati, purifying her daughter-in-law with a bath, led her into the sleeping apartment. There, seating her upon a luxurious bed, he addressed her, saying, O princess of Kosala, thy husband hath an elder brother who shall this day enter thy womb as thy child. Wait for him tonight without dropping off to sleep. Because it's said that the husband enters the wife's womb as the child. So the child, the son, is non-different from the father. Right? That's why then the girl, she's under the protection of her father, then she's under the protection of the husband, and the son is also then in the same category. So then in later in life, she's under the protection of the son. Right? Does that make sense? So now, if the mother is going to be under the protection of the son, that means the son has to be able to perform the duties of, you know, of responsibility like the husband or father, right? So now, where does he learn that? He learns that at home, where his father is doing those things. He learns, yeah, at the Gurukul. Do I see a pattern here? Yes.
Could you elaborate why his father is performing the duties and why he can't learn from his father?
Ah, if the father is performing the duties, why the son can't learn them under the father? Very good point, right? Because all the duties that the father is performing, the son doesn't even notice one of them. All the son notices is that he gets all the attention from the mother, and, you know, she gives him special food, she takes care of his clothes, his room, you know, anything that is there, so he, like a little prince, just sits at home and doesn't do anything, right? All he has to do is smile at the right times, and be cute, and hari bol, it all works, right? Perfect arrangement. Problem is as you grow up, somehow or another you're not so cute anymore, right? And then you have this big, huge guy that doesn't just eat a little something here and there. He eats a huge amount, right? And he makes more of a mess than he did before, right? And not only that, before he'd interact with his mother, but now he just takes everything for granted, right? So in this environment, what will he notice, right? Will he notice anything about how the father is taking care of everything, organizing everything, taking care of the mother and everything? Generally not. Isn't it? The son will only notice the relationship with his mother. Right? Why is the mother always able to be nice with the son? Right? Who is she being not nice with? The husband, yes. So that's why the son is always being able to be nice to, you know, is getting that side of it, right? So now what happens? This son then grows up. Then when he gets big, he gets married. And then he expects his wife is going to take care of him like his mother did. And does it work like that? No, he's in for the biggest surprise of his life. And he will spend the rest of his life, next life, and unlimited lifetimes wondering what happened. You understand? Yes? No?
Yes.
Yes. So, that's why, unless you go to the Gurukul, you'll never learn actually what it means to become a man and become dutiful. Right? Because the point is one has to take care, right? Means one has to be active around the house, taking care of the house, right? Now the son in the house doesn't learn that, right? The mother complains, pick up your room, pick up your, you know, this and that, don't make a mess. But does the son ever listen and do it? Not really. Because why not? Because if he doesn't do it, the mother will take care anyway. Haribal, yes. But if the husband doesn't do it, does the wife take care anyway? No way. Like that. She will emotionally grind him into a powder until he fully surrenders. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? If someone gives you a slap, how long does the pain last? A few moments. But if someone emotionally crushes your heart, how long does that last? It can last a long time. Okay, so of the two, which is better? A slap. Okay. So now, if you're smart, you avoid doing anything that upsets ladies. They have weapons you don't even want to know about. Okay? You got that? Okay, so that means the duties that you do in taking care of everything in the school are the same thing you'll have to do when you're big and you have your own family, right? Now, in the school, you always are doing something for someone else. You never get to do stuff for yourself, right? Isn't it? But if you think about it, your father is doing the same exact thing. He has to do everything for the family. Right? Isn't it? And you have to always be, you know, submissive to others and sensitive to others. And when you get to the house and you have the family, the father has to be like that with the wife and children. Right? And you have to learn knowledge and how to practice knowledge. And the father has to already know that knowledge and be practicing that knowledge. You understand? So that principle of your relationship with your mother is exclusive to that one person. That's it. It doesn't go beyond it to any other woman. Not to wives, not to daughters, not to sisters. You understand? It's an exclusive relationship. Right? And that's only when you're small and cute. When you're big, they expect you to do something also. Right? At least you have to have a job and be bringing home lots of money. Okay? Does that make sense? So therefore, it's very important to not make the mistake, because your mother thinks you're fabulous and the greatest person in the universe, that that's enough to get you through life, because she's the only one who will think like that. Everyone else is going to look with you. If you do something and you're a nice person, then you're fabulous. But if you don't do anything, you're not nice, you're not a nice person, you're a lazy bum. You understand? Does that make sense? So the relationship you have with your mother is real, but that relationship does not extend to anyone else. Right? And most of your life, if you think about it, how much of your time does your father spend with his mother? Right? And is taken care of by his mother. How much time? A lot of time? Most of the time. Yes? Your father's always at home with your mother. Yeah? Mainly. Your mother's, your father's mother's here in Mayapur. She might come, but right now he's not. Soon. Yeah? And then she'll take care of everything and your father will do nothing, right? No, your father still has to do everything, right? Yeah, she's old. Oh, okay. So now she won't pick up the socks anymore. He has to pick up his own socks. Okay. Okay, you understand these things? So, therefore, it's not a matter of kicking something out, right? It's a matter of accommodating more. Does that make sense? Because your relationship with your mother is fine, but you have to understand there's more to life than that. You have to be able to accommodate broader than that, otherwise you have problem when you grow up. Right? Because you can't go into a place, let us say there's an opening for a service somewhere, and you walk in, you sit down, and then the boss there says, okay, what are your qualifications? And you say, well, I'm cute, and I know when to smile at all the right times. And then the boss will stand up, reach across the table, extend his hand, shake your hand, and says, you got the job, right? Isn't that how it'll work? No. Then? So then is it a good plan to make your whole life based around being cute and smiling? No. Be cute, smile, but know that you also have to learn other techniques also. Right? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. That's the point. So we understand that? You understand then why you're here? And why we do all the things we do? Okay. So they may be difficult, they may be tough, but you, by practice, they'll become easy. Because if they're easy here, when you get out of here and grow up, then everything over there will be very easy also. But if you can't adjust with it here, there it'll be very difficult because it's something new and you have to emotionally adjust. Right here, you already have the technique, you just have to adjust to the different emotional relationships. Right? But you know the technique, so you can focus on that and do it nicely. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the whole point. So that's why if you mentally accept this principle, then things will go nice. So then relationships will be nice at home, you'll develop things nicely in school, when you grow up, you have a family, then things will go nicely there. Otherwise, things will only go nice at the home, not nicely here, when you grow up, then not nice in the family, right? So that means one nice, two not nice, right? So better you got three nice. Yeah? Okay? Yes? Good? Okay, very good. Okay. Hearing these words of her mother-in-law, as she lay on her bed, the amiable princess began to think of Bhishma and the other elders of the Kuru race, right? Nobody knows if Vyasadeva is the older brother, right? This is the jackpot here, right? Then the Rishi of truthful speech, who had given his promise in respect of Ambika, the eldest of the princesses, in the first instance, entered her chamber while the lamp was burning. The princess, seeing his dark visage, his matted locks of copper hue, right? So he's got, you know, nice red hair, right? Blazing eyes, his grim beard, closed her eyes in fear, right? So here it's like copper hair and it's considered fearful, right? But somehow or another now it's very popular. The Rishi, from desire of accomplishing his mother's wishes, however, knew her. But the latter, struck with fear, opened not her eyes even once to look at him. When Vyas came out, he was met by his mother, who asked him, "Shall the princess have an accomplished son?" Hearing her, he replied, "The son of the princess she will bring forth shall be equal in might unto 10,000 elephants. He will be an illustrious royal sage, possessed of great learning and intelligence and energy. The high-souled one shall have in his time a century of sons." Right? How many is a century? 100, yes. "But from the fault of his mother, he shall be blind." What was the fault of his mother? Right? She closed her eyes, right? Means you're interacting with someone, you don't close your eyes, right? So that was his point, is they do austerities, then he'll look nice. They don't do austerity, he won't look nice. That'll be their austerity, right? So in other words, she was not austere enough, right? Okay, so who is this person? Dhritarashtra. Now it said he was an accomplished royal sage with great knowledge and intelligence. So what went wrong? He didn't use it. Yes, he didn't use it in attachment to his son. He used it in all other things. He ruled a nice kingdom. He managed nice. You don't hear of anyone trying to take over his kingdom, anyone making any politics, nothing. So that means he ran a very good kingdom. But his attachment to his son ruined everything. Right? Does that make sense? That's why it's very important to learn the proper way of applying attachment. Attachment's not a problem as long as you apply it properly, right? In other words, this was not religiously applied. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. At these words of her son, Satyavati said, "O thou of ascetic wealth, how can one that is blind become a monarch worthy of the Kurus? How can one that is blind become the protector of his relatives and family, and the glory of his father's race? It behooveth thee to give another king unto the Kurus." Saying, "So be it," Vyas went away. The first princess of Kaushalya in due time brought forth a blind son. soon after Satyavati, O chastiser of foes, summoned Vyas after having secured the assent of her daughter-in-law. So this daughter-in-law is now? We just had Ambalika, right? That means the smallest. What Ka means small, right? Right? You had Amba, who is the biggest, Ambika, then Ambalika, right? So the small Amba. Vyas came according to his promise and approached as before the second wife of his brother. Ambalika, beholding the Rishi, became pale with fear. So this time she was told, last one her son was born blind because she closed her eyes. So this time she kept her eyes open. But she was a bit fearful, right? So look at this. These are Kshatriya princesses, right? Now, they were on the Bhishma's chariot when he was fighting with thousands of warriors, cutting off their heads and arms and everything. Did they become fearful? No, so they were taken care of as if they were the daughter-in-law or sisters. So they were having a good time, right? Nice, pleasant Kshatriya entertainment, you know, a good little fight, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So that didn't scare them. But Vyasadeva did. Right? So you can understand he was looking very, very powerful, very austere. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, that austerity and all those things, then he's not manifesting this kind of cute, approachable, nice mood. He's just keeping the mood, I'm a sage, you know, I have my duties to perform, bus. Does that make sense? So that makes fear. Is that clear? Right? So that's there. It's a very important thing to maintain, but you will be criticized by people who are uneducated that you are proud. Maintaining a good brahmachari mood, even though you're very gentle and follow all etiquette, those who are uncultured will call you proud. But don't worry about them. Uneducated, uncultured, misinformed people, don't worry about it. There's millions of them. They'll always be there. They always will be there. They will always criticize. You have to go on with your life. Yes? Oh. Yeah, there's millions of them. Don't worry about them. Like that. Just because you're not there and your whole sole purpose in life is to interact with them, no. Remember, the one you smile and be cute with, that's your mother, right? You don't have to do it with everybody else, right? If you're at home, you're in private, then your mother has other friends, this and that, then you can be nice and interact. But when you go to the temple, you're formal. Others will criticize, others will complain, but they're persons who don't understand or know what is culture, what is proper behavior, what is etiquette, what to do. Don't worry. Don't be proud, but don't worry. Yes? Why does a living entity want to please everyone? Are you supposed to? What is the best way? Okay. Why does a living entity want to please everybody? And is that proper? And if so, what is the proper way of dealing with it? Well, the soul is Sat Chit Ananda. So Sat is eternality. That's existence, right? So if the soul thinks, I am soul, I am eternal, there is no insecurity. Right? Insecurity comes because we think I'm not the soul, I'm the body. And the body's temporary, the body's been through all kinds of various situations in which things didn't go right, we become insecure. Does that make sense? But if we identify as the soul, insecurity goes. Because we are eternal, we do exist. Right? So you have to have an identity to have a relationship with people, right? Because that's Ananda, Sat Chit Ananda, the soul. So Ananda means the bliss or happiness that comes from interacting with people. Right? So that's necessary. The soul must have that. And that's done through chit. Chit means this guy over here, right? Isn't it your chit? Right? Okay. So he's the one that does all the arrangements. If anyone wants to know, he'll like that right now. Right now his father does it, but when he grows up, he'll be the one. So, you know, like that. So don't upset him now, otherwise later you'll get a bad reading, right? Okay, so chit means knowledge and activity, right? You have knowledge, you practice it, you apply it, that's how it works, right? So, therefore, through knowledge and activity, we actually get the relationships. That's a key, right? So, naturally, the living entity wants to be happy, so therefore, that means relationships. So you want relationships with everybody, right? But the point is relationships with each individual is different. Just as you're a unique individual, the relationship with any other person is also unique. Does that make sense? Right? So it's not a problem that you want to please everybody, but you have to know what is the way to please them. Right? And so that may be direct, it may be indirect. Right? Does that make sense? So there must be a difference in how you try to please everyone. Otherwise, you please no one. I once heard of one person that they mentioned that they knew somebody and they didn't want to get very close to them. Because they said it didn't matter who the person was, whether they knew you for 2 minutes or knew you for 20 years. They deal with you exactly the same. Right? So that means they had a method to please, but they used the same method on everybody. Right? Chanakya says, a king who deals with everybody exactly the same will fail. Because everyone's not the same. Everybody's different. So you have to know, you deal with your mother in one way, your mother's friends in another way, other ladies in the community in another way, the girls in the community different than that, the men one way, the older men, the younger men, your friends, those junior, those senior. Right? The general principle is there, a proper following of etiquette, humility, tolerance, respect, proper action performed with knowledge, cleanliness, you know, purity. Does that make sense? But you have to distinguish, because your relationship, your position in life is influenced by the relationships you have with other people. Right? In other words, you have your life, then from your life you have your immediate family, your immediate friends. Then after that, then, you know, the next circle of closeness, then the next circle, the next circle. So if you deal with all the circles the same, you'll have a problem. Right? You have to be able to distinguish. Right? That if it comes down to, I have a situation where I have to choose between preferring someone on the closer circle and someone on an outer circle, how I must deal. It doesn't mean that you are, how you say? Where is it, you know, kind of like you give preference and all that? You know, there's a quality of Krishna. He's equal in his dealings.
Biased?
Yes, biased. Right? It's not a matter of so much bias.
Equiposed,
yeah. Means one is equiposed, that one deals with everyone properly, but accordingly, the more close and intimate, then the more consideration must be there. Because if you deal with someone not as intimate, the same as someone who's intimate, then the person who's intimate will be upset, because then it's nothing special. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore the relationship will not go as well. So then when you try to please someone else, then this person gets upset. And you may think, why are they getting upset? Why are they having a trip, you know? like that. It means I had a nice 5-day, you know, course in bridge engineering. They should learn that, build a few, and then, you know, learn how, you know, to, how you say, not motivate, but, you know, what, you know, where you progress across something, you know, get yourself,
get over,
that's a good one, you know, make a bridge and get over it, right, you know, so like that, you know, so they go, so, but the point is that they have a relationship with you, there's an identity that goes with that. And so then if you deal improperly, it breaks that identity, which creates insecurity. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the material is bad. You'll see so many times, how many times we'll come across Kunti saying, this life of a Kshatriya is so difficult. Because we have duties we must perform, but at the same time, it creates so much havoc, right? Yudhishthir could have just said, I'm not gambling. But as a Kshatriya, he has to agree. And from that, they end up in the forest. Right? As Kshatriyas, then, Battle of Kurukshetra. They could just say, I'm not fighting with my relatives, but they wouldn't be Kshatriyas. Right? So that's the point, is you have to pick and choose. Because ultimately, you have to pick between God and the material creation. So choice must be there. You can't, there's no such, the only one that can please everybody is Krishna. Right? And Krishna's devotees. Why? Because they do everything in connection with Krishna. So if you do something only for yourself, not connected to Krishna, you won't please everybody. In fact, you'll have a tendency as nobody will be pleased with you. Does that make sense? So you have to see who's important and work to please them. And at the same time, be follow proper etiquette and do the best you can in pleasing others. If they're pleased, great. If they're not pleased, what can you do? Does that make sense? Because it's going to be like that. Yes. Okay, how do you deal with those who disturb or insult or deal wrong with those who persons who are important to you? If the person you're dealing with, means in other words, if the person that's important to you is feminine, right, then the person who's insulted them basically has to be avoided. Right? But if you're in general kind of like social situations, when you bump into them, because as devotees and as human beings, we deal nicely. Like Jarasandha, Bhima, Krishna, Arjuna, they were enemies. I mean serious enemies. But they behaved nicely. But we must remember, they were men. Right? They weren't women. So therefore, they could laugh, joke, spend the time together and all that, you know, play different games, then during the day go out and fight. Because men can make these different, completely different categorizations, separate emotions from duties, from senses, from the intelligence, so they can do that. But that's within the men's world. Right? But when you're dealing with the feminine world, they're connected. Right? A gift from somebody you don't like is not a gift to be used or accepted. Right? Does that make sense? Because it's connected. In the men's world, it's a gift. If it's useful, you use it. If it's not useful, you don't use it. Does that make sense? So, if a man has insulted you, but somehow or another he's given you something before, the relationship goes sour, doesn't matter. You have the item, you go on using it. That man won't think wrong, you won't think wrong. Right? But if that man has insulted a woman who's close to you, then you can't use that item. Because the woman doesn't separate the person from the thing. Does that make sense? So you have to make a distinction between, is it exclusively within the man's world, or does it touch the woman's world? As soon as it touches the woman's world, then we're dealing with samas, right? Which means the commonness of everything, right? So that supports the mind, right? If you're dealing in the man's world, you're dealing more with this vyapti. Is that the word, vyapti?
Yes. Is that the pervading?
No, vyapti is, or what is it? Where you tell the difference between things?
Vigraha.
Vigraha, no, but there's another technical word they use for intelligence. Intelligence finds the commonality, finds the difference. Vyapti and samas.
Samasti.
Okay, vyapti and samasti. So vyapti means you tell the difference. So men generally work on telling the difference, right? Because men are individual, they're different. So therefore they look more at it like that. What's the point? His thing and him and his thing are different. Does that make sense? That's the general masculine view. The general feminine view is the other side of the intelligence, is the samasti, the commonality. The person and the thing are non-different, right? It's just the way it is. The men should not think, the women should just think differently and get over it. No, that's the way they think. Right? That's called intelligence, when you can tell the difference between how a man thinks and a woman thinks and accept it. Unintelligent means men think like this, women think like that, women should stop thinking like that, you know, and, you know, remember the engineering, bridge engineering seminar, and then utilize that. No, that's not intelligent, because that means you can't tell the difference. That means it's feminine intelligence. Right? So any man professing that means he's using a feminine intelligence. Masculine means he can tell the difference and understands that and can work with that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So, therefore, if it's there, then it has to be very formal. Formal means it's kept sober. Right? If it's a man's thing, you can laugh, you can joke, this, that. It's just the way it works. But if female is involved, then don't... The acquaintance shouldn't be on the laughing and joking platform. It should be formal, pleasant, nice, according to etiquette. Because even someone who's not who's an enemy should never feel as such. That's the Vedic rule, right? But in dealing, it should be kept very formal and plain. Don't laugh, don't joke. Just, you know, oh, how are you today, Mati? Everything fine? This, that, blah, finish, go on. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to distinguish there on how far acquaintance means there is no, you know, bad water. Then it can be taken farther, maybe a laugh and a joke if the relationship is such, but if not, then it's not. But in this case, then it's kept very formal and nice. No one should be able to tell something that there is something bad. She would never feel bad, but they just know this is the extent of the relationship. Is that okay? Does that answer it or doesn't? Sure? So in other words, the point is human life means intelligence. The ability to be able to tell the difference between things. Very important. It's not all one. Right? And never think because I've figured it out, that's the way it is and it'll always work like that. No. Material energy is unlimitedly, what is it? Mutable. It's always adjusting and changing, right? 8,400,000 species of life, that's general categories. We're not talking individuals. So that's how many, you know, like general categories of the modes of nature have effect, right? So if you have learned something and then you apply it in a few situations, 2-3 situations, and it works, and then you think, I got it down, you don't. Right? You got another 8,300,900,997 options that could come up. So when you can do all those, then you can start thinking, hey, I know what's going on. Does that make sense? Like that. Very, very important. is that you're always going to be using your intelligence, developing your intelligence, applying your intelligence. That's why it's so important to be able to discriminate, learn etiquette, how to deal with all the different persons, because you're going to be doing that the rest of your life. In the school, it's limited, but when you get out into the society, then you're dealing with so much broad things. Does that make sense? It's a very, very, very important point. You know, I watch families fall apart from not understanding even this point. You understand? Does that make sense? So discrimination, that is human life. So know it that having to develop your intelligence now is very, very important. Is that okay? Is that... Yeah? Does that answer the... What?
A question that Yudhishthira Maharaj was gambling.
Yudhishthira Maharaj was gambling.
Yeah. But then there's also the four regulative principles.
The four regulative principles.
Yeah, so then it says that Maharaj shouldn't gamble. So then how this would be applied, this particular issue nowadays, for Eastern Guru principles?
How should it be applied? Well, nowadays, because we follow within the realm of the, how you say, of the devotees, so therefore gambling's not part of the Vaishnav sport. You know what I'm saying? So it's said that there would be an element, games of the Kshatriyas. But it's mentioned that there it's to be avoided. Like that. You know? I mean, Yudhishthira would have avoided it, but because Dhritarashtra approved of it, and he's the elder, and he's the one that brought them up, therefore he went along with it. But otherwise, even in the Vedic age where you could use it, it's to be avoided. Because anything to excess is going to be a problem. So a king, if he's hunting to excess, then we see how many kings, Pandu got into trouble, right? Ram's father, Dasarath, right? It all ended in their death and, you know, a whole big problem. Because of hunting. Then this is gambling. Right? Attachment to women, Vijitavirya, right? Didn't do him any good. Right? So all these different things we see is anytime someone does something in excess, then this problem comes up. Right? Is that okay? O Bharata, beholding her so afflicted and pale with fear, Vyasa addressed her and said, "Because thou hast been pale with fear at the sight of my grim visage, therefore thy child shall be pale in complexion. O thou of handsome face, the name also thy child shall bear will be Pandu, the pale." Right? So even though he's rough and grim, he's still speaking as someone who's dealing with a woman in this. "O thou of handsome face." He's speaking nicely to her. He's dealing nicely, gently, as he should. He just looks rough, but he's dealing properly. Right? Does that make sense? Saying this, the illustrious and best of rishis came out of her chamber. As he came out, he was met by his mother, who asked him about the would-be child. The rishi told her that the child would be pale, of pale complexion, and known by the name of Pandu. Right? Because Pandu is also in the Ayurveda, Pandu, ya Pandu rog, means you'll be pale, like that. Satyavati again begged of the rishi another child, and the rishi told her in reply, "So be it." Ambalika then, when her time came, brought forth a son of pale complexion. Blazing with beauty, the child was endued with all auspicious marks. Indeed, it was this child who afterwards became the father of those mighty archers, the Pandavas. Right? So she looked, right? Because beauty is something you see. So because she looked, therefore the child was beautiful. We don't hear Dhritarashtra's beautiful. He was powerful, he was intelligent, he was all these different things, but he wasn't known as beautiful. Right? The Pandu was very attractive. Right, because she did look, but she became fearful, so he's a bit pale. Right, sometime after, when the oldest of Vichitravirya's widows again had her monthly season, she was solicited by Satyavati to approach Vyasa once again. possessed of beauty like a daughter of a celestial, the princess refused to do her mother-in-law's bidding, remembering the grim visage and the strong odor of the rishi, right? So therefore, by pride, right? So here also we know is that if you look wild and you stink, women won't like you, right? Very important. Ladies don't like stinky guys, right? Okay, so here grim visage. So she's proud of her beauty, so she doesn't like that Vyasadeva is not beautiful, right? Like that. So that's why she's refusing. So we see there's some difficulty here in duty. She, however, sent unto him a maid of hers, endued with the beauty of an apsara, and decked with her own ornaments. When Vyasa means the queen decorated the maidservant with her ornaments, right? When Vyasa arrived, the maids rose up and saluted him, right? The other ones just sat there, right? One just closed her eyes, the other one was just freaked out. But this one, she rose up, she greeted him, everything. So she wasn't disturbed. She just saw he was a great sage, great personality. She respected him, yes.
Sometimes you hear like that when some maid has to, like that, give birth an emergency and they bring a rishi, and the rishi doesn't exactly look so appealing, then they'll send a maid. Do they actually expect the rishi to think that that's them? Or do they just like try to say, I'm sorry, but I'm doing someone else and instead I don't understand?
Oh, okay. So does the queen think that the sage will think that the maidservant they send in their place is them or not? I would have a tendency to think that the girl would try to, or at least in her own mind, think that the guy won't notice the difference. Like that. Or she doesn't really care, but, you know, this is the way it's working. But the sages always know, right? Even the blind sage knew. Right? What was his name?
Dirga Tamas.
So even he knew, and he's blind. So he'd never seen the queen. But he can tell by the mood, this and that. So they know. Like that. So that's why the result comes different. You know? Like that. She waited upon him respectfully and took her seat near him when asked. O king, the great rishi of rigid vows was well pleased with her, and when he rose to go away, he addressed her and said, Amiable one, thou shalt no longer be a slave. Thy child also shall be greatly fortunate and virtuous, and the foremost of all intelligent men on earth. O king, the son thus begotten upon her by Krishna Dvaipayana was afterwards known by the name of Vidura. Notice that this one, this whole end thing, is brought out more and more elaborate, more formal. That's because, you know, because how it was done properly. Does that make sense? So he was pleased, she did everything properly, and the child born is somebody, Vidura, very, very special. Right? You see, that's how you know in the Shastra when something's important. It's emphasized, it's brought out, it's repeated. Right? So that's why sometimes it'll be seen in the Vedic literature, something's repeated, and it's kind of like, oh, we've already heard that. But then you know it's important. Modern literature, you're not supposed to repeat like that. You know? But then in modern literature, there is no such thing as what's important. You know what I'm saying? Because you're objective, so there is no standard, so anything can do everything. You know, like that, yeah. And there's no objective in that, yeah. It means, in other words, you just are able to find intellectual categories, find the commonality, find the difference, and if you've done that, then your intelligence is working. But point is, until the intelligence touches the mind, it's of no use. Because people function by their mind. What they value, what they feel, that's what they do. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So intelligence must be able to touch on the human element. Otherwise, you're just smart, you know all your numbers, you know all your letters, you know different techniques. That's very good. That's the technique, but you still have to be able to connect it. Then it becomes nice. Yeah? He was thus the brother of Dhritarashtra and the illustrious Pandu. Vidura was free from desire and passion and was conversant with the rules of government, right? Here is someone who respectfully dealt, did everything properly. They get a child who's free from passion. Very important to note. So it's the proper performance of the duties that creates the freedom from passion and desire. In other words, engaging the desire in the proper way, in the shastra, produces those who are free from desire, who will make you free from desire, who produce those free from desire. You understand? Though they're using the method of desire, you have to be able to distinguish that. The technique is that of desire, but the mentality behind that is not. You know what I'm saying? You're using a knife to cut a potato. So technically what you're doing is it's violent, it's ignorance, it's destruction. But your motive is to cook a nice sabji for Krishna. So it's not taken as violent and destructive. Does that make sense? Because method is method, it's just the way it works. Does that make sense? Very important to be able to tell the difference.
You used to say on the second time you have to get active, you have to use transcendental passion. You couldn't get disturbed by the other people doing action.
Yeah. You just know that people like energy. People like energy. Therefore, you have to produce it. So, according to your nature and according to situation, you produce that kind of energy. People are attracted. Like that. You know what I'm saying? That's why things like actors and celebrities and models, it's because they produce energy and people can see it and take part in it. That's why they like it. If you have a celebrity who's shy in public and doesn't produce energy in that, they won't become popular. Right? The ones that can produce the energy, share it, they're the ones that are popular. Right? So that's it. So it's a proper performance of duty. Yes, it's a main part. Means that the grihasthas are the ones who perform the samskaras. The other ones don't. So because the brahmachari and all these different things, the grihasthas are arranging it. So they do all the samskaras, right? And generally, it's the grihastha that performs the death ceremony and all these other things. But so all the samskaras are done by the grihasthas. Like that. So that's their duty. They follow the samskaras, everything works nice. They don't follow, not as nice. Like that. Vidura was free from desire and passion and was conversant with the rules of government and was the god of justice born on earth under the curse of the illustrious Rishi Mandavya. And Krishna Dwaipayana, when he met his mother as before, informed her as how he had been deceived by the senior most of the princesses and how he had begotten a son upon a Shudra woman. Having spoken thus unto his mother, the Rishi disappeared from her sight. Thus were born in the field of Vichitravirya, even of Dwaipayana, those sons of the splendor of celestial children, those progenitors of the Kuru race, right? In the field of Vichitravirya. What's the field of Vichitravirya? His wives, right? Because the man is considered the seed, the wife the field, right? So that you grow things in a field, right? So that's the field. So notice here, in the other things he came out, he told what happened, it wasn't exactly perfect, and then what did Satyavati do?
Request him again.
And then what did Vyasa do? Said so be it. But notice here it said after explaining it, then what did Vyasa do? Disappeared, because that's it. Three times, that's it. Got it? Okay, anything else? No? Okay. And here?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai.
Then the lady gets married several times, and then the children belong to her.
To who she's married to.
Then
whoever she's married to, then the children are his. Technically.
So then the previous children also belong to the second.
Technically they do. They have a relationship with the first one, but they technically belong to the second one, in one sense. Unless there's an agreement, then it's his sons, and then it goes with his wife, and that it can work like that also. It doesn't matter. You can do it either way. But the point is if there is no man involved and the lady has a son and she gets married a second time and has children, then who she's married to, those children are his, because he's married to the woman, so therefore they're produced from that field. So therefore, whatever is produced from that field, who owns the field, then the children are his.
And inheritance will go forward that way, or there will be less.
Say again?
Inheritance.
Inheritance would go that way if there's no other sons. Otherwise, the inheritance will go to ones that are actually his sons. And the other one can take inheritance from the original father, but he can't actually claim it. Because now he's with someone else. If he's been accepted that he's the heir to the new father, then he can't claim anything from the original father. But if the son of the stepfather is the heir, then he can get from his original, his biological father.
You were mentioning about the ladies, they don't make difference between the person and the thing. So, Marja, I had two questions on the same point. Is it that because of that they are more religious and they have more faith in Krishna? Maybe they don't see the difference between Krishna and his paraphernalia and his things.
It can help like that, yeah. I'm saying each mentality has its advantage and disadvantage. Means once you connect to attachment, it has its advantage, the woman's mentality. You get out of the material world, the man's intelligence is to advantage. Right? So that's why the woman just goes about her duty and not worry about attachment, just tries to be attached to Krishna, and the man worries about getting out of the material world. She connects herself to the man, then she gets out also.
Right? Is this because they won't accept the thing that they have a problem with the person? Is it due to also bodily attachment?
Yeah. It means they're more bodily conscious, more bodily attached. So their jealousy, their envy, their lack of forgiveness is greater. So because it's like that, the men connected with them have to take that into consideration.
Okay.